So what we're talking about here is loving our church better. And the reason I want to put it that way is that as we go into a process and a structure and a strategy, some in our church and some of us will think, this doesn't feel very personal, doesn't feel very loving. And I want to persuade you, this is to love people better. This will actually help the church family if you do something like this. Okay? It's about loving people better. And it's about clarifying a personal pathway. So Colossians 1 there says, here's the one we proclaim, admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom so we may present everyone fully mature in Christ. That is to think about, what do we want for people at our church? And I'm suggesting that if we want for them what the apostle wanted for people, we want them to mature in Christ. In other words, we're recognizing that they're on a journey of faith, and that journey is not random. We want them to become more like Christ. The danger is we don't think about that. If we just organize church and do church the way we were told to do it, the way we experienced it, but never actually think about what are we hoping will be the experience of the people who come into our church, then often the two are completely mismatched. So we're just doing church because that's the way we do it. I'm supposed to do expository preaching, so I do an expository sermon. And some churches have a band, so we have a band. And you're just kind of picking out stuff that you think works rather than thinking, what do we want for the people who are coming into, what journey do we want them to take while they're at our church? So if we start with the pathway that we want people to travel and then design our church ministries to accomplish that journey, then we will be better serving and loving the people who come into our church. That's the basic idea. Okay. So if we think about a journey that people might make as they come into our church, let's start with people out there who are aware of us in our church, but we're not aware of them. So I don't know who we're talking about. So people out there who perhaps they've driven past the building, perhaps they know somebody who comes to the church, perhaps they've looked at our website, perhaps they're moving to the area and looking for a church, perhaps they go to a school and one of their school friends comes to the church. So they know about us. What impression have they got of our church? It's worth thinking about, what impression have they got? What do they see when they drive past the building? What do they see when they look on the website? What do people of our church say about our church when they ask their friends at school? It's worth thinking about, what impression do people get about us even though we don't know who they are? All right? That's aware. Then we want them to come along. So they actually walk through the door and they're welcomed. What experience do people have? What experience do we want them to have when they come through the door? So they're having an experience, but it's worth stopping to think about, is it the experience we want them to have? You know, is the car parking attendant so annoying and so demanding? Frankly, they just want to go home before they walk through the front door because it's already so complicated to come to this church, they wish they'd never come. All right, so welcome. And then at that point, they're going to make one of two directions. You could just say everyone's on the same path, but actually we don't believe that. People are in one of two very radically different situations. One is not believing in Christ, and the other is a Christian. So right at this point, we want to make a distinction between those who are wanting to explore the faith. They're not Christians. We want them to explore the faith. And then we want them to be converted. We want them to put their faith in Christ, to be born again, and then join the people of God. Meanwhile, there are others who arrive who are already Christians. So they started coming, they're attending. And to be honest, at this church at the moment, for example, we have more and more people who are attending and not wanting to come into small groups and get into the process of the church. They just want to come. And it's worth thinking that culturally, as this church has become much more varied, particularly the Sunday morning now, only 46% of the church are white English at our morning service now. Lots of people who are arriving at church, they like our church, they don't do evening small groups. It's not how they do life. They'd be willing to spend all of Sunday at church if necessary, but they don't go out in the evenings. They have their kids with them. They don't do babysitting. They're not going to come to small groups. So there's a growing number of people who are attending the church. We'd love them to get connected, that is to start coming to our Connect courses and to actually then start engaging with what does it mean to be a member of our church. So we have a Connect course which explains what it means, and then at the end of which there's a joining in prayer which summarises what it means to be a member of our church. And we say that the front, you see, our values are loving God, loving each other, loving our neighbours. And so we say love equals act, and then so we ACT, attend, contribute, talk. Attend church at an appropriate small group. Contribute your money in ministry. Talk to each other and to friends. That's what being a member of our church. So we're just outlining what's expected. We don't police that, unlike in some churches. We ask people to pray that prayer, and then, in other words, themselves, keep their prayer and commitment to the church. And we'll pray that prayer occasionally. That's connected. Then growing. That is growing and maturing in the faith. Then serving, that's serving in ministry teams. We want everybody to be serving in a ministry team. And then they'll be going. Just to talk about going, that's new for us. Because, of course, you don't really want anyone to go, do you? You want people to stay, build your church. But actually, what happens then is that people go badly. And so they arrive on Sunday, or they don't tell you. So, Pastor Richard, thank you for all that you've done. We're on our way home. We're going back to South Africa. What, today? Yeah, last Sunday. Oh. Have you got a church you're going to? I'm sure we'll find one. And you're just thinking, that's hopeless, isn't it? So people will go for lots of reasons. Some will die and go to heaven. Some will be part of a church plant. Some will relocate for work or to go and care for family. Some will go back to their homeland. And some are being moved for their jobs. And some are just thinking they'd like a change and a bit more space by moving out to the country somewhere. And we'd love to have some influence over them going well. So actually, at the very least, to be looking for a good church to attend wherever they're going to move to. So let's think about leaving better. All right. So now there's some... I don't know why this is backwards. I'm not very good at this stuff. So it's a pathway, the idea being that people are walking this pathway. All right, so just get the basic pathway. We're saying we want people who are aware, we want them to come in and be welcomed. Those that are not yet Christians to be exploring the Christian faith and then to be converted and to rejoin the congregation, as it were, so they're part of the congregation who are attending. Then connected in, so actually members of the church, if you like. We call it soft membership. Growing in maturity, serving on ministry teams, and leaving well. Now, you might say, why have we picked those particular names? They are actually all connected with ministries that we shape to these purposes. Okay, so our groups, we happen to be called growth groups, so we call them, it's called growing. So in the conversation between what you provide and the pathway, there is a conversation there. If our small groups were called maturity groups, then we probably would have called the growing thing maturity. But it just suits us, therefore, to call it growth groups. Now, the really important thing to understand about this is that there is a population of people in each of these numbers. And beyond this one, we have a list of who they are. So we know everyone who's in the welcomed group, in exploring, converted, attending. We've got their details. We've got data for them. We know who they are. We know how many there are, and we're looking after them. In other words, we are pastoring them. We're caring for them. Then we think about, well, what ministries will we provide for them to achieve that purpose? Just by way, structurally thinking, well, they're outside the church. That's the front door. They're in the foyer, if you like, of faith. This is the family room where the church family is, and then that's the back door as people leave. So just for us physically, just to illustrate how we're dealing with people in that journey. Okay. Right, let's just think about then which groups go together. So instead of just having... I'm partly sort of leading to the congregation, to the conversation further, but instead of just having, a team of 10 people and we all do the same thing, which is impossible, you just have chaos, duplication, and all sorts of... So... I could take you into the team building stuff that results from this, which I probably will. So these four here are taken on by the evangelized team. So our evangelized team are the team that are concerned for people outside and coming into our church. So that team is concerned for people who are aware. They care what's on the website. They care about what happens in through the front door with the welcome teams. They care about Tuesday night life course. They care about More to Life, which is the second course. They care about that a lot. We don't want them to care about anything else. We want them to care about this, that process. That's the evangelize team. Okay. The next team then is the serve team, which we call serve. The serve team are concerned for Christians who are newly arrived at our church. So not the non-Christians, but the serve Christians. They also care what happens at the front door. So they care about what kind of welcome do Christians get when they come in through the door. They care about this attending group, and they care about those in the Connect courses. Okay? So there's a sizable population of that. And that ministry team is looking after that. To give you a flavor of that. So that means, of course, they care about parking, they care about the welcome teams, they care about those who are attending but aren't in any lists, aren't in any groups, and they care about the Connect courses for people who are coming in. So, I don't know, but here at this church, that's probably about 200 people is their population. And incidentally, that's why, certainly for a bigger church, you just can't have everybody doing everything. I want to suggest it's the same for a small church as well, but we'll talk about that. Then next comes the instruct ministry. So this is everybody in small groups and the preaching program. So Santosh Thomas is looking after all of that. For us, that's a lot of people in those small groups. Then there's the ministry training, which is the train ministry. And then going, we have two existing ministries, that is networking and supporting. So network is our church planting across London with commission. And then support is our relationship with International Mission and our partners overseas. Just to say at this point, by the way, the categories, so we've described there 1, 2, 3, 4 ministries. And there is a fifth, which I'll talk about in a moment, which is the worship ministry. Fits onto lots of other church descriptions. So one of the most famous is called 5Ms, which Saddleback developed and lots of people use. 5Ms... does the same thing, dividing up the process that people are going through in church. They start with MAG, which is magnification. That's what happens on Sundays. Then they do membership. That's people joining in. Then they do maturity. That's people maturing in Christ. Then they do ministry. That is people serving in teams. And then they do mission. Now, in America, where that develops, because you just build a car park in a church, people turn up. They don't need to do mission at the beginning. So they start with MAG because people just turn up at church. In the UK, that is not happening. So you have to put evangelize at the front. So we start with evangelize. The question then is, where do you put MAG? For a long while, we put it at the back and just said, well, that's the engine that drags everything through. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But that's why we've got evangelize. So that's the same as mission. We've then got serve. That's the same as membership. Then we've got instruct, that's the same as maturity. We've then got train, they've got ministry, and then they've got magnitude, we've got magnify, we've got worship. But the same, if you know the Trellis and the Vine Project, they use 5 E's. So you might have evangelize, and then they might have engage, and then they might edify, and then they might have equip. What they're missing then is Sundays, so you need an exalt somewhere. You know. So you can do it with different letters, they all have strengths and weaknesses. The point is you're dividing it up into different ministries. Okay. Question then is, where does worship fit? Now, so a lot of ministries, we just have a fifth one called the Mag Pastors, so they're the music people. Our problem with that was that if we treated it like a ministry like the others, who is the population they're looking after? You could say, well, they're looking after everyone. In which case, for a while, we had the orange of worship went around the whole pathway. But then it looks like worship's looking after the whole church, led by our music director. Well, that's not right either. Some people just have it as a ministry, perhaps at the end. But then for us, that didn't work because it's not really looking after people. And we wanted to emphasize how this is a relationship with a group of people. The Australians have something called a pentagon. So they go on and on and on about their pentagon. And you look at the pentagon, and I always mock them. I mean, they're brilliant. They're ahead of us. But, you know, it's things like hearing Bible teaching, praying, and good community, and evangelizing. You think, well, it's just basic Christianity. I think what they're trying to describe is the same thing we're trying to describe, is what is the engine that drives people along the pathway? So if there are different stages, yeah, but what gets people to move? What's driving people down that pathway? And I think for all of us, it's what happens in church on a Sunday. It is something of an engine. What's happening on Sunday? So we're, of course, calling it worshiping God. What's happening on a Sunday is overseen by the worship team. And that includes our values, loving God, loving each other, loving our neighbour, i.e. maturity at the end. You could accuse us of saying, yeah, but you're mixing up your values with your ministry there. You're right. That is a confusing thing. We're working at all this. 6 months ago, we didn't have the arrow in the middle. A year ago, we didn't have the pathway at all. So it's a constantly evolving pathway. The key thing is we have a pathway. We're being intentional about the journey we want people to travel at our church. When people arrive at church, they don't know about this at all. Okay? They don't know how we're organized. We just want them to experience great church. We just want them to arrive and somebody welcomes them. You know, we want them to leave and somebody gets in contact with them. We just want them to get an email welcoming the church. We want them to be invited to the welcome drinks or to the welcome lunch. We just want them to be invited to an appropriate small group. So they don't know about any of this. This is behind the scenes. We're organizing to love the people of our church better. Okay? So having established the pathway, now we establish the ministries. And of course, when you're evolving and you're starting to clarify your pathway, you've probably got existing ministries. And of course, you'll try and fit them onto your pathway. That's okay, I get that. But it just starts to change slightly the way you think about your ministries. So here are now the ministries to match those things. So if you go back, all those words, aware, welcomed, spoiled, yeah? And now we think, well, let's provide the ministries they need. What are we doing for the aware? What are we doing for welcomed, exploring, converted? And at the top there, you see the data groups, C1, C2, C4, C5. The office are actually processing names. They've got lists of people because you need to communicate with them. If you don't, you'll be doing everything up front in notices. Your notices gets longer and longer. And then you try and put it on the video roll, but people keep missing the video roll. So comms is complicated, isn't it, as you get bigger? And you want to get bigger because you want to reach your community. And if you want to say plant, well, let's just plant lots of small churches, yeah, but then you can't afford the screen. So there are issues, whatever kind of church you do, but you can organise in order to be a good church. So as you start then filling in, there are all the ministries that we're providing within those ministries. But you see, what we're doing, therefore, is for those who are exploring, there's life on Tuesday evenings, there are events, Mission Week and Christmas and Easter. So, for example, our mission team actually run the program for Easter and Christmas as a taster of what this means. Of course, is that so? I don't know what's happening. So on Sunday, I know I'm preaching in the evening. I don't know anything else that's happening on Sunday. It's not my job, and that's why I'm free to do things like this. The delegation of teams, you delegate. So for example, for a serve, for a welcome drinks in my house, it'll appear in my diary. I won't even know it's there. James, who was playing on the guitar earlier, he's our serve minister. So he will invite everybody. He'll arrange to get everybody there. His team will turn up at 7 o'clock. They'll rearrange our house. I'll be given a brief as to what to say and a list of names about who's there. The food will all be there. All the people will turn up. At the end, they all clear up and everyone goes home. What did I do? Nothing. Because I just could not survive trying to do the welcome events as well as everything else. I just can't as church gets bigger. So there's lots of things we want to do, but I'm the bottleneck unless you build teams. And then suddenly all sorts of things. So my job is mainly quality control now. Not recruitment. In terms of how aware are people, it would be explained in the Connect course that we're arranged this way. Okay. So they might not know very much about it, but of course, the truth is lay people are dealing with this kind of process all the time. It's just that clergy have been so far behind on simple organisation that we find all this amazing. Anybody who's working at a school or a hospital or a business has been doing this kind of team building and process thinking, and they love it. Your operations manager's going, at last, there's a bit of clarity about what we're doing here. So certainly within the church, certainly by Connect groups, certainly the growth groups, people know, our prayer meeting is all organised like this, all our meetings are always like that, all our offices are organised in order. So at our central prayer meeting, for example, after sharing the Lord's Supper together and singing together, the first thing we do would be to pray for either the network or support. So on the screen comes network. It's always got the same colour. The leader of the network ministry interviews one of the church planters from Cross Commission. The next prayer meeting, it's support, comes at the same colour. The ministry leader has an interview with a missionary, some international partner, or whatever. There's a video made or something. So every prayer meeting, we're alternating those two. And then in the prayer sheets and in the order of what happens then, we'll be introducing people through those ministries. So in turn, over the months, there's Dundonald News, which is just immediate stuff. But there's also then a focus on one of the ministries as you go through it. AGM, reported by ministry. Everything's constantly by those ministries. In the tactical teams, they take it in turn. In our off-sites, we take it in turns. So everything is done reinforcing that structure constantly. So it doesn't take you long to find out that it's going on. We just don't need to burden people with understanding it all. One problem can be is that people arrive at church and saying, so who's my pastor? Especially when there's an issue. And the answer, in one sense, whoever's preaching, they know is a pastor. And if you look like you're the oldest preacher, you're probably the senior pastor. The language we would say is you're being team pastored. In other words, there's a team of pastors who are pastoring you. And if you want to know who they are, well, there's a list in the hall. Obviously, the ones that preach obviously are pastors. But there are also elders. There is an issue to that. I won't get into there's a complexity about that. Because congregations so quickly default to congregational pastoring, you've got to push very hard against congregational pastoring in order to get proper team ministry. What I mean by that is, if you have a second or third congregation, if you appoint an assistant pastor to be that congregational pastor, the congregation will behave like the congregational pastor is their pastor and will go to them for everything. What that does is it undermines the economies of scale of the ministry team leader who's leading ministries across the congregations. And so the pastor starts saying stuff that he doesn't know what he's talking about. Because the team across the church are saying, you know, let's say evangelize, we're not having a mission this year. We're running a series of events in each term. And the pastor starts saying, yeah, we'll have a mission in March. And there's chaos because you've got a congregational pastor who's trying to operate like the one-man band. And there's a limit to what a one-man band can do. Relationally, 150 if you're really good. If you're the second or third pastor, it's much less because you've got to know everybody else as well. Now, you might think, okay, well, we're a smaller church now, so it doesn't affect us. Well, it does if you appoint two pastors. Because as soon as you appoint a second pastor and give them a different population to look after, so you miss out on the economies of scale. Yes, I'll show you in the org chart, which I'll show you in a minute, for the staff team, where children and youth sits, same with women's ministry. All those are our subsets of the population. So this at the moment is the whole population of the church. So what you could do if you wanted to is divide it into streams. And you've got your 10 a.m. congregation, your 4 a.m. congregation, your 6:30 p.m. And then you've also got your children and youth, your women's ministry or your men. You want this development for everybody because it's a biblical pattern of development. So in fact, you're doing exactly the same for children and youth. One of the problems for children and youth teams sometimes is because you want to make it simpler, or you've only got, let's say you've got two people doing it, you can't allocate five people, and you haven't got all the team ministry leaders involved in the children and youth ministry. One of the things, what we've done here is you collect them together So you might say, for example, I can't remember how they do it, find life, live life, go for life, or something, you know, and you might summarise under three headings. But exactly the same process is there behind the scenes of the simpler clarification. So you could just have the ministry leaders overseeing the adults and the children, but because children are so different to adults, you'd end up needing to appoint different teams. You may as well have an economy of scale across the wall. You could, of course, in your children and youth team say, look, for all age groups, we're going to have three ministries then, right? But instead, what you tend to do is do cipher, because 11s to 18s are so different from 4s to 11s and 0s to 3s. So you can divide it up any way you like. You've actually got to somehow kill off this idea that organising well is against family. You know, if you're going to get the family to travel together to be there for dad's 70th birthday party, you need organisation. If you don't organise it, the family can't gather. Who's going to organise the picnic when you're just going to muck around, chill, hang out together? When you've got a bigger church, any kind of church, if you don't organise it, the picnic won't happen. So the organisation is supporting family life. So we've got to, you know, we've got to not tolerate the idea that organising is the enemy of family. It's the opposite. If you organise well, you get fantastic family time. All right? So I'm going to rush you through the teams thing and come back to that question. If I may. The other question that you might ask is, so where is all the caring being done? The answer is, by everyone everywhere. So it's Galatians 6. You bear one another's burdens. But we'll get to that. Right, let me go forward. So dash through all this. Quickly through this, just ideas. Responding to God's mercy by becoming a team ministry. What kind of church do you want to be? Not a cruise ship for passengers, where people put their feet up and just relax, do nothing. Lots of churches are like that. Not a battleship for critics, blasting other churches, you know, we alone are the faithful. Some people do that. Not a tool ship for antiquarians, you know, we're preserving the traditions of the past. We're not a racing boat for competitors. We want to go faster than the other churches in the area. Yeah, we're winning. We've got more young people, you know. Not a Greenpeace vessel for activists. You know, we just, all the latest social causes, that's what you get with us. Not a research ship for academics. Some churches are like that, you know, you've got to have a PhD. We're God's lifeboat for anyone drowning in sin. So we're actually about saving lives. And look, we're all broken. You get hauled out of the sea, you need some first aid, you know, but you don't therefore, you know, go back on shore and leave people drowning. You join in. We're a lifeboat. So a biblical basis, right, this is the usual model, one-man band pastor. What you want is an orchestra. I did have a, you could have a picture of a band. I did have a picture of U2, but you guys wouldn't know who U2 is. But Swifty. No, she's a kind of one-man band, really. That's no good. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, moving on. Why do you need team ministries? A, to grow churches. So instead of neglecting the ministries that are needed to grow a church, your church will grow better if you build teams. Secondly, protect the senior pastors from burnout. Instead of senior leaders becoming exhausted, trying to rush, do too much. Thirdly, recruiting church members to the mission of our churches instead of feeling frustrated and irrelevant. We want to become a bit more like a football club. That is to say, people think of church as they come to church like the crowd to watch the incredibly expensive professionals on the pitch, that's the clergy, do their job. But in fact, the whole church is on the pitch, playing, led by player managers, you know, there's a youth academy and all the rest of it. The watching crowd is the community, that is, family, friends, unbelievers. Everyone's on the pitch. Everyone's a player. So, very interesting in Romans 12, Paul's first example of sacrificial worship is soberly self-aware. Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, that you ought. And therefore, be respectfully body conscious. Therefore, be active team builders. I'm not going to delay, just to get us to the... So, here's the critical thought. The benefit of a multi-ministry structure is more ministry to grow the church. Let me show you why. If you assume that biblical church ministry is in that rectangle there, all right, so it's just a shape that represents everything the Bible says your church should be doing. Okay, whatever that is, that's in that box. Do you understand it? All right. A gifted leadership may deliver a lot of that. So, if you've got a really talented pastor who's a very talented generalist, this is him doing so much of what the Bible requires. It probably a whole load of Bible teaching, a whole load of evangelism, a lot of training and stuff. And if you basically you're training the church to be like the pastor, then members of the congregation won't be, they're not full-time, they're not trained, they're not experienced. But let's say you've got a whole load of gifted young people, and they're all learning to be little pastors. This is a classic city centre ministry, student training church. Okay, so you've got very, very able pastors training lots and lots of young professionals and students to be little pastors. And basically saying, we just teach the Bible, because in truth, that's the only ministry being done in the church. Okay? But everything else is neglected. All right? So the central 30% is being done with excellence. The 70% secondary ministry is neglected. So a classic evangelical, big city centre student ministry training church, for example, excellent sermons, excellent small groups, rubbish music, terrible building, terrible websites, all sorts of things just neglected. No films, no media. And people who are not tertiary educated brain boxes don't belong. Okay, that's a classic mono ministry culture. Right, the benefit of multi-ministry structure is more ministry to grow the church. So what if you divide up what the Bible requires into a few blocks? Let's call it five blocks. So assume the biblical ministry is that. We have seven blocks. Basically, if you have 20, it's too complicated. If you have two, there's no point. So you need somewhere between four and seven. Take your pick. There's no rules on this. But then what you do is, if you put gifted, specialized leadership into each of the boxes, whether or not they're employed or not, they'll do better than a generalist. Right? So if you put this person in that box, he'd be useless. And this person in that box, they'd be useless. But if you put the person where they're best able, you're getting better leadership because they're specialized. They're more concentrated in that ministry. So you've got 80% being done in all the ministries. And if then you get members of your congregation, you're not just using the people who are good at Bible study leadership. You know, your musicians are being used over here. Your ops and technical people are being used over here. In other words, everybody in the church now has a ministry to be part of. So you appoint specialists to each, and then they train. And so therefore you get a better range of ministries, and you get more ministry being done. So a good example, for example, it's a couple of years ago now, we were at churches coming up to Christmas, and suddenly a little film came on. And the film went, you know, diddle-da, diddle-da, Christmas is coming. And here's some things you could do. Why not find out what the services are and pick which one would your friends and neighbours like to come to? Secondly, pray for them that they might come. Thirdly, invite them and bring them with you. And then fourthly, don't forget to follow up after Christmas and invite them back to church again. Diddle-da, 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 Christmas is coming. So I turned to my assistant pastor, who was Matt Beebe at the time. So I said, that was great. Who made that? He said, I don't know. So I said, so I'm the senior pastor. You're the senior assistant pastor. Neither of us even knows who made the film, let alone had any role in the words in it or the making of it, because if it had been given to me, I'd have worked on the text and, you know, shortened this, and it would never have happened. I don't have time to do that. But the point is, because the evangelized team had spoken to the ops team and said, we need a film for Christmas, and they just gone on and did it. And so we had one. And it might have been better if I'd changed a few words. But I prefer the imperfect film that we got to the perfect film that we would never have got if everything had to come through me. And that's because you build teams and you empower teams to do that. So there's our thing is witness. So here is our org chart. Okay, it looks complicated. You forget all the top stuff. So you've got to, it used to be the Church of England top left. That's been removed. We've left the Church of England. So you've got Co-Mission is a network that we belong to. There's governing elders, of which I am one. So I'm a senior pastor. Quite often, the senior pastor is actually running one of these ministries. So normally in a church, the senior pastor would be running probably train and instruct. So all the preaching and small groups overseeing that, and probably the training of ministries. So if, for example, you've got one staff member and everyone else is lay, You probably have the main staff member doing those two things. And then you'd be picking lay leaders. One person will be doing evangelism and welcome, evangelize and serve. Somebody else who's on music and can play an instrument is doing Sundays. And that's the reality of where you are. These two are outside. They're a bit anomalous to most churches. It's because of our long history in church planting and in World Mission. We've got such a developed history. We wanted those two extra. But when you think about it, those five are the five M's. So here's the 10 o'clock. There's the four. There's the three congregations. There's our kids and youth. Goes across there. There's our women's ministry. You could have men's ministry there. And then the operations team support this ministry. One interesting thing for you, each of the ministry leaders, there's a senior man, in our case, who's each employed. So Richard, James, Santosh, Richard again, and David Tubbs. Each has a senior woman as their ministry advisor. So Lizzie, for example, who's working, she's the ministry advisor for James Williams in the Serve. So some of our fantastic senior women are now very visible and public. They help distribute communion. They're involved in interviewing. They actually report to the elders. So they do the termly report on the health of the church. They write the reports on the ministries that the elders then hear. So it's just a way that, because we are a complementarian church, but we saw the need to involve our senior women. And they're very happy with that. And our younger women now can see what they're aspiring to be as senior. And I think that fits well with the biblical model of co-leadership. It's not co-leadership. The men are leading, but they're supported by the women. So ministry leader and a ministry advisor. They're not co-leaders. Ministry leader, ministry advisor. Those women are wonderful, and they're taken very seriously in the church. So there's the org chart. See the youth ministry here. It's not actually divided, is it? Because it's a bit more malleable, flexible. But we still want them to deliver these ministries. There's nothing in that pathway that we don't want our kids to have. You know, do we want our kids to evangelize their friends? Yes. Do we want our kids to bring their friends to church? Yes. And to be welcoming? Yes. Do we want our kids to mature in Christ? Yes. Do we want our kids to become leaders, you know, trained to ministry? Yes. Do we want our kids to worship the Lord? Yes. Do we want our kids to carry out church planting and mission? Yes. So it's the same thing for everyone. Okay. Okay. Again, you might think this is only for a bigger church. Not true. That could be for a church of 30, just all lay people. It's not about employment. It's about structure. What this puts a tariff on, high tariff, of course, is communication. So if you've got siloed workers who like working on their own, you'll have chaos. What this means is that the senior leaders need to meet together for good meetings. So you've got to get rid of the, oh, we hate meetings at this church. Well, you'll always be a small church. You'll always be a small church because you can't delegate to anybody. As soon as you delegate, what you have is then confusion, which is really annoying. So you've got to be able to employ and to appoint to leadership good team players who can communicate as team and get the importance of turning up to the meeting, contributing to the meeting, listening in the meeting. And then you organise meetings that people want to come to because they want to know, what are we doing at Easter this year? I want to be at the meeting because I don't know at the moment. What are we doing with the kids? Are the kids coming in for these services or not? I want to come to the meeting because it's not my decision. So I want to come to the meeting to find out, am I preparing packs for the children in church or not? You want to come to the meeting. So that means you need to organise meetings where the purposes of the meeting are clear, where there's paperwork in advance if necessary. Only the people who need to be at the meeting are there. You clarify what the purpose of the meeting is and what the output of every meeting is. So that people start saying, no, I enjoy the meetings. They don't go on too long. I need it to do my job well. So I'm glad to be there. There's about six or seven different kinds of meetings. It's come from the simple question you need to ask is, what meetings do we need? Not, what meetings have we always done? So let me give you a few. Every week on a Monday, we have a Bible study for an hour before lunch, and then we have lunch together. So what is the purpose of those meetings? And that is to unite our staff under the word of God in Christ, especially if people are tired and tetchy from the previous day, and to have lunch together, to enjoy one another's company, to build camaraderie. All right, that's a meeting. Once a term, once a year in about May, so in a few weeks' time, or early June, we go away for 3 days as a team and plan for the year ahead. Each ministry leader has what's called a ministry action plan, which is a working document. It's going along. So it's a couple of pages, a few pages long. And it's their working plan for next year. And so we'll look at that together as a team in pipeline order for a couple of days in Devon. So we'll go off for walks and so on, start with the Bible. But each person presents their plan. Everybody else then knows what each person's planning to do. As senior pastor, I get some important input. Sounds a bit complicated. I wonder whether we could fit that in with the vision for next year, which is going to be this. Oh, yeah, no. So you're getting everybody together, so you're coordinating it at a time when people don't own it yet, so they're not too fragile because it's in draft. And then they go away with it, and then that's their ministry action plan. They go on holiday in August. They know what they're coming back to in October, and that's what their line managers are holding them to throughout the following year. Okay, so that's once a year. Once a term, there's an off-site where we revisit those ministry action plans with data. Whether that's useful, of course, depends upon what questions you ask. So each ministry leader will be asking some key health indicator questions to consider. Bad questions, then the data's no use. But if you are the evangelized person, what you want to know is, let's say you might want to know, across the three congregations, how many people from the different congregations are attending the life course? And how many are being converted? And how many people are having evangelistic conversations? You say, well, I don't have any data for that. And that's why we need an annual questionnaire to find that answer. And you want to plot the difference between the... So why is it that our evening congregation are just not bringing people on Tuesdays? We've got a much higher proportion of people from the 10 o'clock. What's not working for our evening people? The answer is, it's too early, or it's too late, or it looks boring, or whatever it is. So it forces you to ask questions with the data. So that's what we revisit at our termly offsites. In addition to that, I have a termly meeting, which is called a blue sky meeting for the senior leaders, where there's no notes, no paperwork, no decisions, and we just daydream. So brainstorm, daydream. Often I've got lots of things to talk about. The blue people in the room are terrified, and I just have to say, don't worry, we're not going to do that. What if we were to plant three congregations in the next 10 years? You know, and they all say, well, how would it happen? I don't know. Let's just brainstorm. So that's a blue sky meeting. Then there's a monthly strategic meeting, which I run with the ministry trainees, where we do look at where the issues are in the pipeline, in the pathway. And so we do that together. That's my meeting. Then there's a weekly staff meeting, which I don't run. Senior assistant pastor for staff runs that. That's where they're doing weekly reflection and planning. So I don't have to do any of that. I have a weekly pastor's meeting on a Monday afternoon, where I just meet with the two pastors, one of whom oversees the staff team, and so will run the technical team, and one of whom is in charge of theology, and therefore is developing the theology of the church. That's Santosh. They then have other meetings that I don't even know about. So there's a Sunday review meeting, and there's a planning thing on a Friday. I don't need to know about that. But what I'm pointing out to you is different meetings for different purposes, and each one has the aim of the meeting clarified. One of the things you might be thinking is, it's too complicated, we can't do this. Okay? It took us 4 years to transition. Because it took us a year to get clear what we were trying to do, then a year to explain it to all the leaders, then a year to appoint all the leaders to the church, and then a year to make sure it was all working. By which time everyone was bored sick of witness. And we left it alone and moved on to other things. But what it meant was that we've doubled our size since doing it, because we've organized properly. Yep. You don't want to keep changing things because people get frustrated, and you do need to keep reminding people. So the other meetings I didn't mention to you is I have a termly meeting for all the leadership, senior leadership of the church. There's about 70 people, called the Envision Evening. And then there's also a witness teams meeting once a term. So that's where people who are in the ministry teams. So each congregation has a team under the leadership. So there's a 10 o'clock evangelized team, 4 o'clock evangelized team, 6:30 evangelized team. So if you've immediately got, say, 2, 4, 6 plus leads, you've got 8 people in that team, multiplied by 7 teams, 7, 8 to 56, you've got 56 people in leadership. So suddenly you're involving your lay people, all kinds of leadership, and they take it very seriously. You know, as ministry teams, you kind of do this stuff casually. People care about doing it well because they're Christians. So you don't want to keep changing things that's frustrating and people check out. You can have too much vision and structure. If you talk about it too much, you know, people want to, can we get back to prayer and Bible, please? Now, you're doing that all the way through. But as you say, you are allocating ministries. So when I had Andrew Nichols on staff, he was doing the Instruct ministry here. We put the marriage courses in there because he was, both by capacity and seniority, quite capable of running those things. You could, of course, put them in training, call it training in marriage instead. So according to who your staff are, you might allocate particular ministries to one place or another. When you think about it, you see, all the ministries are basically everything. You know, you could say attending is, well, everyone attends. Connecting, well, everyone needs to connect, you know. So in one sense, they overlap, but you need to try not to overlap, so distinguish, so that you are looking after a particular population of people. But how big the ministry grows will vary according to the personnel and to the season in the life of the church. So where do you put the... So we're doing something called shoulder to shoulder at the moment, which is how to walk alongside somebody through suffering. Where does that fit? Does that fit in... So when I say we, Santosh is doing that. I don't know anything about it, but he's doing it. Does that fit under serve? Actually, he's doing it under growing. So he's doing that there. Christmas services, is a Christmas choir, is that evangelize or is that worship? Oh, it's singing, it's probably. But what if it's an outreach event? Let's say it's wild animals, they do some animals and next door. So that's in the evangelize. It's that event there. So the evangelize team take it. Or you could do the serve team. Who's busiest? Give it to the person who's not busy. So yes, in the realities of life, you'll be deciding where do things allocate. But at least then the serve team are just doing those things. They're not worrying about all of this. They just can't, because you're growing. Yes, every couple of years we'd send out, probably through the AGM, on the AGM night in July, the prayer meeting in July, I'd give a questionnaire. You want to work very ask very carefully how you put those questions. So both in the Connect courses, there's a questionnaire which says, what experience of ministry do you have, e.g. music, catering, tech, leadership, of it, you know. So you're inviting people to describe what experiences they have. What you don't ask is, what ministry team do you want to serve on? That is the wrong question, because then people go to, when they say a preaching team, please, and then you don't want them to preach. So you find a lot out there. So both for the Connect groups that are filling in constantly, or if you haven't done it, we did it once about 4 years ago. We had 350 replies. We had 3,500 offers of ministry. Because what happened was all those keen people filled in, so I could do this, I could do that, I'd like to do some door-to-door, I'd like to do, you know, I'd love to do this, once I did that, I wonder if we could do the other. So suddenly you've got all these people, you've got 350 team members. Now that needs coordinating. The staff spent 3 days shifting through to form new teams. We don't need that, but there's a number of people saying they want to do door-to-door. Why don't we get them together and form a... You see, if it's dependent upon you deciding what they're going to do, you'll never get around to it. Okay? It's unleashing the power of the congregations. You've got people in front of you who want to serve. So you need to be looking at how to build teams with the people in front of you.